Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Second hour of the show. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studios. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Listen closely during the course of the hour as Kevin will tell you about the great Kia he is driving this week that you can pick up at Sunbury Kia, routes 11 and 15. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, right near the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. All right. It is a big time in free agency. A lot of moves are being made. Darrelle Revis, for example, not having his option picked up by the Patriots, thus he is a free agent. Brett Kiesel released by the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers still have to work out a contract deal with Ben Roethlisberger. Frank Gore looked like he was headed to the Philadelphia Eagles. Now it might be the Indianapolis Colts. You already have Ndamukong Suh. Later today, it'll become official. His $114 million deal with the Miami Dolphins. That is a division that has made a lot of big moves so far. The Patriots, of course, retaining Devin McCourty. Cutting or not retaining Vince Wilfork. Not retaining Darrelle Revis. The Jets picking up Brandon Marshall. The Bills making the big trade to get LeSean McCoy. The Dolphins getting Ndamukong Suh. That's all in one division that has happened so far. So you can see that there's some teams there that feel like they have a shot. They need to move up and need to move up now. And that's what they're doing. Now, what the Bills will do with the quarterback spot, because they signed Matt Cassel as well. But all, you know, the NFL's talking about, you know, cautioning teams about tampering. Well, you could caution about tampering all you want. The information that you're getting all the time happen to be the agents talking to the Adam Schefters of the world. The agents are the one that's telling you what's going on with the negotiations, trying to get their client's name out there. So, you know, keep that in mind. With that, we bring in Dave Bryan, SteelersDepot.com. Dave, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. Long time no talk to you.
Well, let's get to the free agency part. Let's talk about Motes, first of all. The Steelers decide to keep him. The importance of that move by Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and look, this is something that we expected to happen, you know, about a week ago. It's one of those things, it was a necessary thing to do. It's just part of that housework that needs to be done before the start of the new league year because, let's face it, current, you know, heading into today, the Steelers only had one outside linebacker under contract that it was on the 53-man roster last year, and that was Jarvis Jones. So Arthur Motes played well in limited time last season. He's a good character guy. They got him fairly cheap, you know, 3 years, $7.5 million. We'll see what the signing bonus is on that, probably in the neighborhood about between $2 and $3 million on that. So it's not a contract that's going to kill him this year at all as far as the salary cap goes. So this is one of those necessary things that we expected to happen before the start of the new league year. And now we're still waiting to hear. Hopefully the team can get cornerback Bryce McCain and tight end Matt Spaeth. Both those guys are scheduled to be unrestricted free agents in, you know, a little over 24 hours or so. And they need to try to get those guys under contract as well before the start of the new league year.
Why no worlds? Too expensive?
You know, I guess technically you can't rule him back out right now. But you know, look at these guys that have already agreed to terms so far with the Pernell McPhees and the Hughes over there in Buffalo, and look at the average yearly salary, you know, and that's dangerous to do, but it's kind of all only numbers that we have outside of the guaranteed money right now. And then you look at what the tag would have cost to tag Jason Worlds for a second year in a row. He's just not worth, you know, $12 to $13 million on a one-year deal. Now, last year they paid him $9.745 million. And even that was a little high, 7.5 sacks for him. You know, I thought he was okay against the run, set the edge, but, you know, I think he's hit his ceiling. And I think his worth right now is really between $7 and $8 million a year and maybe a $10 to $13 million signing bonus. So they're letting him test free agency. I'm sure, you know, as soon as he gets his best offer, you know, he'll bring it back to the Steelers and we'll go from there. But it doesn't look right now like they're going to, you know, be able to re-sign him. It looks like a team maybe like the Eagles or the Tennessee Titans, who reportedly have interest in him as well, could sign him away. So, you know, be on the lookout for that over the next, 48 hours.
You mentioned something in that answer that's critical to this. They feel he has reached his ceiling. Give me an idea, Dave, the importance that an organization has to make on any player about judging whether or not they're either at their ceiling or whether there's still a lot more in the tank for said player.
Yeah, and that's tough to do. You know, it's something that, you know, look, he's played for the organization, you know, since he was drafted in the second round several years ago. You know, Jason Worlds is what he is, in my opinion. He's not a guy that's really going to ever, in my opinion, be a double-digit sack guy. I went back this past season and broke down all 7.5 sacks of his in the All-22 film. He only beat a left tackle once on one of those sacks. And if you go back and you look at that post, there were a couple of gimmies in there, you know, where the quarterback's flushed up into the pocket. One, you know, in the game against the Kansas City Chiefs, he got credited for a sack for running Alex Smith out of bounds on a pressure that, you know, James Harrison provided on the other side there. So it just, and it wasn't just last year. You go back and look, you know, at his sacks from the previous year as well. And it's kind of the same thing with him. You just don't see him dominating right tackles like he really should. Now, look, I'm not here to blast Jason Worlds, but I have to call a spade, and I think the Steelers pretty much, you know, when they gave him that $9.754 million tender last year, perhaps they thought they could get a little bit more out of him. But I think it was obvious this year that he's definitely not worth, you know, $11 to $13 million, whatever it was going to cost to tag him again. They're going to let him test free agency market, and we'll see what the rest of the league thinks about him as well, too. But when you got a guy like you know, Hughes over there in Buffalo is getting $9 million a year now. You got McPhee, who's going to get, I think, roughly $8 million or so in the contract that he's just signed this morning or is agreeing to with the Bears. Where does that leave Jason Worlds? I think it's going to be under that $8 million, you know, average yearly value.
Well, you're a guy that watches the All-22, so you can tell who is actually making plays, who's setting up plays, and who in reality moving forward to somebody they should keep. Now the next part, obviously the Polamalu thing is interesting. Whomever wanted to say, you know, we wish he'd retire. That's not how today's game is done with free agency. I mean, is this an organization that just still feels burned because of what happened with Hines Ward a few years ago?
Well, you know, I think the selfish side of them, of course, wants us to end, you know, the way and hope Polamalu does retire, but you know, you can't make a player do what he doesn't want to do, and it's going to be totally up to Polamalu to decide, you know, what his future is. You know, very curious this morning that Kevin Colbert, the GM, sent out, you know, really a one-sentence press release. Basically, it was news to tell us that there was no news, and that is weird. You know, there was some sort of message, I think, obviously, kind of being sent in the direction of Polamalu and what that news – I mean, what that message is, we can only assume that he's saying, look, he's either going to have to announce his retirement, he's either going to probably have to take a mega pay cut of around $3 million this season, and if he doesn't, you know, we're going to have to release him after the start of the new league year. And people will say, why is it important to wait until the new league year? Well, for starters, if they are going to release him with a June 1st designation on him, they will ultimately save $6 million later in the summer in salary cap space by doing so. They would, of course, have to carry his full $8.25 million cap hit up until June 1st. But at that point, then is where they would get $6 million relief this year. Then a little more, of course, dead money would carry over into 2016. But in order to make a player a post-June 1st cap hit, he has to be on your roster at the start of the new league year, and that, of course, is Tuesday at 4 o'clock. Now, just as easily, they could designate him just as a regular release on Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever after the start of the new league year and go ahead and take the full dead money hit of over $4 million this year and then save, you know, $3.75 in cap space that way. But we'll see. But I have a feeling we're going to know one way or the other what's going to happen with Troy Polamalu by Wednesday evening. I think we should have some clarity on that, and it's not looking good. It's really looking like he's not going to be in a Steelers uniform next season.
Right. Roethlisberger has one more year to go in his contract. Obviously, there's more of a sense of urgency now to get something done. Can they do it in such a way that also opens up cap space for them for the next couple of years?
Well, you know, look, this is going to get done at some point. It's a matter of when, not a matter of if. Now,
right.
As far as, you know, it's going to come down to the guaranteed money with this thing, as far as, you know, average yearly value, you know, and all the breakdown, the way that goes. But here's the thing. If you're expecting them to save a lot of money in cap space in 2015, that's not likely going to happen. Now, they can free up, you know, depending on how it's structured, $3, $4 million or so. But you have to remember that you have to give him a base salary of the minimum for his accrued seasons in the league. And then you also have the previous, you know, signing bonus allocations that are still on the books anyway that cannot be rearranged in a contract extension. So there's only so much of cap space that they're going to clear up. Ideally, you know, what I would do with them is try to front load it a little bit as much as possible to where his cap hit doesn't even move from what it was originally scheduled to be. And if you can do that, you know, you're releasing yourself from more of the dead money risk at the back end of the contract. But they're going to get it done at some point. It's just a matter of, you know, how much guaranteed? $40 million, $35 million. I think that's going to be in the neighborhood of what the guarantee might be on this.
Starting to sound like our management here, Steve. You have a lot of dead money. No, it's we know that Le'Veon Bell is going to have to miss some time. The assumption at the moment appears to be a maximum of 2 games. So, what are the intriguing possibilities of another running back that would fit into that backup mode, but would also be the guy that would probably have to carry the load for a couple games?
And let me clarify, I said guaranteed money with Roethlisberger. That's what I expect. And his signing bonus would be between $30 and $40 million. I apologize about that. But as far as a possible backup to Le'Veon Bell, you know, look at what happened last year late there. I think they need to address the position with a veteran, a guy that could come in and start those first 2 games with you, and a guy that's okay with being a backup. You know, not like LeGarrette Blount last year, who obviously was disappointed with his role with the team that ultimately led to his release. You know, I don't know. Look, you look around. Pierre Thomas from the New Orleans Saints just got released.
It's a good running back.
Just a few days ago. That would kind of be a guy if he was okay with the role and with very little money, because let's face it, the Steelers aren't going to spend a lot on a backup running back this offseason. But look around. Look around at these free agents that are going to be on the market, you know, in less than 48 hours here. There are a ton of running backs. So the Steelers will be able to pick and choose. A guy like Darren McFadden over there, you know, with the Raiders, has never really been able to put it together as a starter throughout his career. He'd probably be a good backup. The thing is, they got to find a guy that doesn't have a lot of mileage on him, that, of course, doesn't fumble, is okay with being a team player and playing a backup role to Le'Veon Bell. And also, you know, how much does he want? And you factor in all those things together, we'll see what they get. I wouldn't expect a guy to be well over 30 either.
Right. Now, you know darn well a lot of people have mentioned the name Reggie Bush. And considering that Le'Veon Bell does all three areas better than Reggie Bush does, that's why I've never felt it made a lot of sense. You?
Yeah, Reggie Bush, I'm just not seeing it.
I don't see it either.
I'm just not seeing it. Look, he's already, 30 years old, I think, just turned 30. He's got, you know, he's had some problems staying healthy himself throughout his career. You know, is this a guy that can offer anything else for you in addition to playing running back? Can he still return punts and do that kind of stuff that goes along with it? Is he willing to play that kind of that secondary role? To me, it just doesn't seem like a fit. And I'm willing to bet there's going to be a team out there, too, that's possibly willing to give him a little bit of a larger complimentary role and a little bit more money along with it. But, I mean, it's easy. I can see where people are coming from with that. And I guess it wouldn't be overly surprising if he did land in Pittsburgh. I just am not expecting it personally.
Obviously, they have the draft coming up, which you and I will get into as this gets closer. I know Penn State's combine is coming up a week from Thursday, for example. What are some areas that you feel the Steelers can address based on the players out there in free agency in combination then with the draft?
Well, I don't, you know, I think if people are expecting a lot of free agency news from the Steelers, I'm just not seeing it with the potential available cap space. And when you look around at the guys that have already come to terms with new teams, that list is dwindling so quick here. You know, I do expect, you know, they've already re-signed Arthur Motes. I think we'll hear about Bryce McCain here over the course of the next 24 hours or so. Outside of that, you know, we already talked about them possibly adding a running back via free agency, maybe another lower end outside linebacker, perhaps. I don't think it's going to be any of these big names like Brandon Graham that's still out there, or even Derek Morgan. You know, I think they're going to ask for too much money. And I think ultimately the Steelers want to address that position in the draft. I think they probably feel that if they don't get Jason Worlds back, that Arthur Motes can't at least hold down that starting position opposite Jarvis Jones until they're able to get the rookie, you know, up and going there. So I think they're going to go ahead into the draft, you know, with the need of several positions there. But don't be surprised if, as usual, Kevin Colbert goes with the best player available on the board, and that could even wind up being an offensive lineman.
Right.
Because we've seen it before with Colbert that he just cannot turn down value. And if you got a guy like Brandon Sheriff, from Iowa, who many people see as not a tackle, as possibly a guard.
If that kid
falls down to 22, he's going to be hard to pass up, as is Lael Collins, the tackle from LSU. The same thing with him. Is he too small to play tackle? Is he really a guard? And will he fall down the board? So I expect him to go, you know, a lot of different ways in this draft, and really it's hard to pin down where that first-round draft pick might be.
Let me ask you one final question, Dave, then I'll let you go. Then your penance will be done. We've talked a lot about analytics on this show, and we know darn well that the Steelers are one of those teams that they don't – analytics is not their bag. You and I both know that. In what you do, do you look at analytics and try to apply it to some of the game tape that you watch and so forth?
You know, it's hard. It's okay after the fact. But, you know, knowing that the technology that these teams have around the league now, you know, they can easily, I'm sure, with a push of a button, I mean, super quick, to know down distance, position on the field, personnel they have on the field, and personnel that the opposition has on the field, and kind of know, you know, based on tape study, that they probably can have that figured in as well, too. What kind of play call is going to work best? And the same goes with defense, you know, as well, too, versus personnel groupings that they see and location on the field and down distance, all that stuff that goes along with it. As far as after fact, now we chart everything,
right?
You know, on the Steelers game in and game out. And yeah, it's easy to go back and look at runs to the right, runs to the left, you know, passes against nickel, you know, passes against base and vice versa with runs and all like that. But as far as it using it real time, I mean, it's easy to, you know, Monday morning quarterback after the fact with these stats and you know, with these numbers and all. But I would like to hear about them using more analytics in real time with this team. Now, I like to use the analytics more when it comes to especially like the combine and playing around with those type of numbers. You know, power factors and all like that. But we don't really – when we look at the numbers and we play with numbers and we write a lot about the numbers, but we don't really, I guess, use them kind of real-time along with the game tape.
Right. I just thought I'd ask. You know, everyone's interested in it these days, so I thought I'd ask. Dave, as always, a pleasure. Thanks so much. Look forward to talking to you again very soon.
Steve, anytime you need me, I'm here for you. You do a great job. Thanks for having me.
I'll be honest, I love the job he does. He's a great guest to have on. Dave really analyzes everything. It's SteelersDepot.com, so check out the website. But Dave analyzes everything. I mean, he not only will take a look at the game itself, then he'll watch a TV tape, then he'll get the All-22, and he'll take a look at the All-22. That's why I really like going to him, because he breaks things down. And I wanted to ask him about analytics at the end, because, I mean, that's something, it's a topic that we've talked a lot about. Kevin and I have discussed analytics how many times. And not only that, but the audience reaction when we talk about analytics, I have found to be absolutely intriguing, the way the audience reacts to that. All right, one more half hour of the show to go. A lot to talk about in that final half hour, including more on NFL free agency. We'll get to that. But to the bottom of the hour we go. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried and true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday as we roll on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Steve Jones with you. Kevin Herr in dry dock today. I know Kevin's going to be out next week. They're looking at colleges next week. For his son, not for him. It's great to have you with us. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. So a lot going on, obviously, in sports. What I find intriguing is that on a national level, you talk about what goes on at a national level. And I find to be one of the truly boring topics that is discussed repeatedly on a national level is who is the MVP of the NBA? Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry. You know, I know they're really trying to push this, and they're really trying to push it hard. Okay? Really trying to push it hard. But it's not, it doesn't resonate. And I can tell you right now, it doesn't resonate in this state. It doesn't resonate in our area. We don't talk about the NBA much at all. There's a reason we don't talk about the NBA much at all. It doesn't resonate. And that's something I think there's a lot of wasted time. And there's a lot of wasted time on MVP talk all the time anyway. I think that's something that has come and gone as to, in my youth, what was it? Who's the Cy Young Award winner? Who's the MVP? Who's the NBA MVP? Who's the Hart Trophy winner in the NHL? Yeah, okay, people hear it now, it's like, fine. It doesn't have the same cachet that it used to have. And there's so much NBA talk that, I don't know, not there. Very quickly, Jay Cutler is going to quarterback the Bears. Obviously, I'll be in Chicago tomorrow, but Jay Cutler is going to be brought back. He'll be the Bears quarterback for the upcoming season. He won't have Brandon Marshall, obviously, because he was dealt to the New York Jets. The Dallas Cowboys, they have franchise tagged Dez Bryant, but they have not done anything with Murray yet, the running back, to the point where, evidently, according to sources, the Cowboys haven't even called Murray at all. So, now, how are the negotiations going? Evidently, there haven't been any negotiations. Zero. And the Jacksonville Jaguars have signed Julius Thomas away from the Broncos. Huge. Frank Gore was thought to be going to the Eagles, now rethinking it, and may go to Indianapolis. The Patriots declining Darrelle Revis' option, which, by the way, was a huge number. So the Patriots, if they want to re-sign him for a lower number. Well, you can forget about the lower number. I mean, he's going to try and get a big number someplace and has the satisfaction of walking out of there with a Super Bowl ring. So those are some of the things that are happening in the NFL right now. And the Gore part's the part that obviously has stunned Philadelphia Eagles fans, because I think they thought, okay, well, I'll get Frank Gore. He's serviceable for maybe a year or two, maybe a 15-carry-a-game guy, and then you get Sproles out there, and Sproles will get maybe 10, 12 touches in a game between pass receiving, punt returns, and being a running back. But evidently he is rethinking that. Very interesting. The Houston Texans, Bill O'Brien releasing wide receiver Andre Johnson. Like, he's their all-time leading receiver and so forth, but there's no question they've lost a step, and Hopkins is the guy they want to get the ball to anyway. Patrick Willis is going to retire. So, last year, Willis was hurt. Navarro Bowman was hurt, and that was a big problem. Brian Hartline leaving the Dolphins. He joins the Cleveland Browns. And so those are some of the things that are happening. Of course, Brett Kiesel released by the Pittsburgh Steelers, and they've signed Arthur Motes. And Worlds, of course, officially is a free agent today. So those are some of the notes going on right now in the NFL. And it's amazing how the NFL dominates everything. I mean, they dominate every cycle. Right? They have free agency, they dominate. Now we're going to find out officially who signs where. Then after that, you have college combines coming up. Penn State's college combines coming up in 9 days. It'll be the 19th, a week from Thursday, at Holuba Hall. So they'll have their combine. And then after that, the day after, Penn State starts spring football practice. Cliff Lee, surgery possibly would end his career. He only had 13 starts last year. The Phillies are just in terrible shape right now. Terrible shape. Might as well bring in Charles Barkley right now. Right now, terrible. And Rob Manfred says there's been positive feedback so far on the pace changes. We'll get to that in a moment. Mark Appel, who was the first overall pick of the draft a couple years ago by the Houston Astros, again, arm soreness, okay? Lance Lynn, Cardinals, hip flexor strain. He's out. A-Rod got a hit, knocked in a run yesterday. Woo! Nine Braves pitchers combined on a 10-inning no-hitter. This is how spring training's going so far. We're going to have one of the Pirates announcers on next week. We had Tim Neverett on last week. I think we get Greg Brown next week. I could add Steve Blass this week, but the problem is I'm in Chicago for the Big Ten tournament, so we can't quite pull that off this week with him. We'll get an update on the Pirates next week. So those are some of the things going on there. College football news and notes. Dak Prescott, a couple of teammates, spring break Florida, were assaulted at a concert. Okay. Bob Stoops, have you heard about the racist frat video that took place at Oklahoma? Have you heard about this? They had huge protests, and the viral video surfaced on Sunday shows members of the Sigma Alpha Epsilon fraternity chanting a racial slur and indicating that African Americans would never be admitted to the fraternity. The chant also references lynchings. Well, David Bourne, who's the president of Oklahoma, reacted very quickly and said that their investigation confirmed the contents of the video and announced it was closing the local chapter. And the university president, David Bourne, released a statement saying that members had until midnight tonight to remove their personal belongings from the frat house, and it is closing. It's out. They had a huge protest yesterday on the Oklahoma campus, and both Bob Stoops and Lon Kruger, the football and basketball coaches at Oklahoma, were there as part of the protest along with their players. And they should be. Lon Kruger, I have never met Bob Stoops. I've never met him. So I don't even think I've been in the same room with him. Lon Kruger, I've met many times. He was the coach at Illinois and, you know, interviewed him here and there. And I remember in 2001 being at the Georgia Dome to do the Sweet 16, and a TV station asked me to do a live shot back to Pennsylvania, and it was being done at Phillips Arena before a Spurs-Hawks game. And at that time, Lon Kruger was the head coach of the Hawks. And he just, you know, it was before the game, and I was getting ready to do it. He just walked over, and one of those, hey, how you been? The whole thing. I was like, hey, how have you been? You know, and he had signed a 5-year contract. He made a lot of money, learned a lot by coaching the NBA, too. So at least I know him a little bit. I'll know him a little bit. But I always felt he was a great guy. And he said yesterday, he said, you know, this is something that should concern everyone. And it should. He said, it's not about athletics. It's about anything other than everyone being affected by this. And he's absolutely right. And he was there at the protest. Bob Stoops was at the protest as well. And it's something like that should always concern you. I mean, always should concern you. People are people. And you just can't do this. You just can't. And I know that evidently Oklahoma football's already lost a recruit over it, but that's beside the point. I mean, I'm just adding to the story. And you know, something like that is so ignorant, doesn't belong anywhere in our society. It just doesn't. The college football playoff, they're not changing the dates on it. Remember Kevin and I talked about the dates changing for the college football playoff, how, you know, on New Year's Eve, what do you do? But they're not going to tinker with this thing. They're just not going to do it. And they say they learned a lot of lessons from the BCS because they're always tweaking and changing. And they said they've learned a lesson out of that. Have some patience. And that's what they're doing. So they're not going to be major changes in the second year because there's nothing on the table to change anything. And that includes the dates. They are still going to play on New Year's Eve, even though television, ESPN, requested them to move the dates. I believe New Year's Eve this year, I want to say, is a Thursday. Right? Is it a Thursday? I think it is. Right? Because I think New Year's Day is a Friday this year. And or maybe New Year's Eve is a Friday, something like that. There's a reason why they're not gonna change the date. And TV said, "Look, play on the 2nd." But no, they're not gonna do it. The ratings were off the charts, but they're also on New Year's Day this year. I mean, they had a perfect scenario: January 1st, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the Rose Bowl. Oregon, Florida State. Right after that, Alabama, Ohio State. Yeah, you had big names, big cachet, big controversy. No TCU, no Baylor. And I was talking with Tom McGrath last night at Penn State after the talk show last night, and we were talking about the Big 12 not having a championship game, and they're going to have to migrate in that direction. The problem is with the Big 12, to get there, you have to expand. Well, how do you do it? Who do you get? Now, obviously, BYU wants to get back into a conference, but here is the issue with BYU. And BYU is playing Gonzaga. Is it tonight in the West Coast Conference Championship game? I think it's tonight. Here's the issue with BYU. And it's an issue for the NCAA Basketball Tournament Committee. You're saying, well, what issues with Brigham Young? They will not play on Sundays. So if BYU gets in, again, so when you talk about how do I put together a bracket in Indianapolis, what are the considerations? Well, one of the considerations is no matter where you seed BYU, you must put them on the Thursday-Saturday lines. They must be on the Thursday-Saturday games. You can't put them on Friday-Sunday because if they win on Friday, they won't play on Sunday. And that's the issue with getting them into a conference. When you get BYU into a conference, it has nothing to do at all with football because football is going to play on Saturdays. Okay? College football, with the exception of Labor Day weekend, doesn't play on Sundays. It's the other sports that are the issue because BYU would be a natural fit for the Big 12. They'd be a natural fit for the Big 12. I think it'd be great. You know, major university in Utah, Salt Lake City, big following, huge stadium. I mean, Lavelle Edwards Stadium, I think, is 60,000. I've been in it. And the Marriott Center, the basketball arena, seats 21,000. Huge. I've done 3 games in that arena in my career. And it's they'd be a great fit. But the problem is, you know, what do you do with your soccer teams, your field hockey teams, women's basketball? They play Sundays. And they'd have to be constantly scheduling around BYU around Sundays because their teams won't play on Sunday because BYU would be a good fit for the Big 12. I think another team that would be, I think, in consideration for the Big 12 would be a school such as the University of Houston. Remember, they entered the old Southwest Conference late in the running. I mean, I think, yeah, that would give them a nice 12-team balance to get that championship game. That, I think, ended up costing them an opportunity to get into the college football playoff. No championship game. I think that hurt them. But don't expect any there'll be no changes. And one of the things that won't change will be the date. You know, there have been some suggestions. Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, asked the group to consider a poll midseason, a poll at week 9, and a poll at the end to avoid the abrupt fluctuations that you sometimes had during the course of the year. Mountain West Commissioner Craig Thompson said that he'd like to see 3 or 4 rankings released every other week in November before the final week ranking in December. Those are some of the things. But they're not going to change it this year. What you saw this past year is exactly what you're going to see next year with the college football playoff. Now you've got that. Now you have the NCAA tournament coming up. NCAA tournament will have 68 again this year. They'll have the play-in games in Dayton next week. I'll tell you right now, a school that is going to have trouble in this thing is going to be Wisconsin in terms of the seeding. The only way Wisconsin, I think, can avoid Kentucky in the seeding is as follows. Be a number one seed. Win the Big Ten tournament and then hope that that between Villanova, Virginia, or Duke, there's a stumble that opens up a one line. Because you're saying, how is this possible? Kentucky is the one should play the 8. Well, Wisconsin's not going to be the 8. No, that's not how it works. They regionalize the tournament as much as they can. Reason being, they're trying to make sure attendance is strong. So Wisconsin and Kentucky, in all likelihood, I'd say an 80%+ chance, will be in the same bracket as a 1 and a 2 seed, respectively. Kentucky is the 1, Wisconsin is the 2, even if Kentucky is the 5th seeded team overall in the tournament because of the regionalization part. I think that, I'm trying to think, Kentucky would get, I think we'd get Cleveland to start, and then I think Nashville's next, then Indianapolis. The Big Blue Army is going to have no trouble traveling anywhere. They'll invade any arena. I've never seen a college basketball fan base travel better than that in my life. It's on when you're around them, it's unbelievable how many of them there are. Villanova, expect Villanova, should they win the Big East tournament, to be the number one seed, and I think they'll be the number one seed in the West. Expect them to start next week in Pittsburgh at Consolidated Energy. So expect Villanova to be in Pittsburgh next week, and then I think the next round for them would be at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. And being in the West wouldn't be bad. You're saying, why would Villanova be in the West? Say it holds. It's Kentucky, Virginia, Duke, Villanova. Why would Villanova be West? Well, you've got 3 teams in the Eastern Corridor, Duke, Virginia, and Villanova. They're going to try and keep Duke close to home. They'll keep Virginia, which would be the second overall seed, close to home. One has to go. Well, the one that goes is Villanova. Well, that's not so bad. I think Arizona's a really good basketball team. I don't think Arizona's a great basketball team. And I think Arizona would be the 2 seed in that group. They would keep Arizona out West and would keep them as a 2 seed. What do you do with Gonzaga? Where does Gonzaga go? Well, a lot's going to depend on what they do with BYU. Right now, Gonzaga would be a number 2 seed in this tournament. They lost to BYU at home. They fell off the one line. Now they would be a two. Do they fall to a three if they don't beat BYU for a second time? If they do win the West Coast Conference Championship at the Orleans Arena in Las Vegas, then you can expect them to be a number two seed. And Gonzaga's a good team. I mean, Kyle Wilcher, former Kentucky player, has had a great year for them. Pangos is outstanding. And Sabonis, whose dad was a great player for Lithuania and played, you know, even on bad knees, played so well for the Portland Trailblazers. Sabonis, a heck of a player now. He's a good inside-out big man that can pop out, hit a three for you, very mobile. I mean, Gonzaga's a good team. Mark Few's done just a great job. And what happens is you get a great reputation. And once you get a great reputation, you can then cement yourself in the recruiting part. Butler's done a great job of cementing its location. They took advantage of a fabulous situation because of the timing. The Kelvin Sampson thing wrecked so many things at Indiana. Butler jumped right in, and they recruited a lot of players that normally would have gone to Indiana. But Indiana was such a mess during that particular time that they opted to go to Butler instead. They took a great, I mean, that was a great situation. Brad Stevens took advantage of that, got him to a couple of Final Fours, national championship game, and now he's with the Celtics. And I think a lot of people thought that Butler would fade in the Big East. Last year, they were not very good in the Big East. This year, very, very good in the Big East. Butler will be in the tournament again. So schools like that have done very well. Wichita State, Northern Iowa, they'll both be in the NCAAs. Murray State, 27-5, not going to make it, I don't think. All right, wraps it up for today. Tomorrow's show is from Chicago leading into the Big Ten tournament, Penn State and Nebraska. Look forward to that from the Sunbury Motors studio. 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Q, it's 11-15, Hummel's Wharf. I'm Steve Jones on News Radio 1070 WKOK.